So this is Joe Nunez.
Avery Pascal.
And I'm Katie Williams.
And I'm Paul McKenna.
And this is the Film Tools Podcast. Our guest this week, Katie Williams, Director of Photography. She's, you know, a social media presence in and of herself. So Katie, tell us a little bit about yourself and how'd you get started in this industry?
Well, I'm Katie, and I come from a place called South Carolina.
Is that in America?
It is.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's on the other side, though, so it takes a while to get there. But I started, and I lived there till I was 18. I grew up with a twin sister, and we're both in the film industry, and we both decided to move out here right after college and pursue film. And we both chose two different career paths. So I'm in the camera and she's in sound.
All right. So tell me what prompted you to get started or want to get started in shooting. How'd bug bite you?
Well, I guess in high school or middle, maybe even back to elementary school, my twin and I would make home videos at home. And then in high school, it kind of turned into YouTube videos. And it was just something fun to do. Turns out that you can make a career out of that. You know, not necessarily, well, you could, I guess, have a YouTube career, but, you know, we chose more of the film career. And it just seemed exciting that you could actually have a job that you like doing and get paid to do what you like to do. Like, kind of mind-blowing, if you think about it.
So was it always you behind the camera and your sister dealing with the sound, or was it you filming her, or what was it?
We were, like, both in front and behind camera doing everything. And when I say everything, there would be, like, a 16-member cast, and we were all of those people.
That's the YouTube videos you were doing were 16 people.
Yeah, but it was, like, keyed and masked as the two of us into all of these different people. We were behind the camera and in front. She didn't get into sound until pretty much coming out here, which seems to be a really good career choice for her and kind of anyone else. Those sound people are legit.
Sure.
You would say sound's one of the most important things?
Yes, for sure. I mean, what's a visual without sound, really?
Surveillance.
Besides a silent picture.
Yeah. It's surveillance.
I
like that.
Yeah. Spielberg says 51% of your picture is the sound. I believe him.
I would agree.
That's fair.
Joe and I have a running issue where, so I do a lot of the social media stuff for Film Tools. And
nice.
A lot of that is on iPhone and vertical video, so it's just about as bad as it can get from someone who's obsessed with the perfect picture and you know, obviously not horizontal or not vertical. So I've had some issues with recording sound to my iPhone, and
of course,
and having to deal with that issue and figuring out that those problems that come with it.
I mean, even in like the American Cinematographer Manual, it specifically, like, one of the first things that says is that you have to come up with a shot that accommodates every other department, and that includes sound. Like, you have to find a frame that is also able to capture good sound. So that is part of the job, that you cringe when you see people just, like, throw sound away. And what I cringe at the most is when other departments try to suggest to sound other ways so that they can make the shot work. Like, oh, can you boom under, you know? I mean, rarely does someone try to tell a camera person where to put their camera. So, like, why are, like, producers or directors think that they can
move the
try to find a solution and think that it's all going to work? Like, you hired this person for a reason.
The sound people beg for just a little time to get a little sound in the background, just room tone. Just give me 10 seconds, please. And you got to fight every department.
So why is that? Why do you think that sound is such an afterthought for so many people? Because it's not the
focus
of the industry?
I don't know. Maybe it's because we're all looking on a monitor. We're all seeing what this camera's capturing. And we all see when it looks good. We see when it doesn't. Sound is, like, you know, if they're good, you don't know they're there. And so they're doing all their figuring out things on their own, but you can't see what they're listening to. Occasionally, you know, you have the comm techs, and I guess that's when what the higher ups get. But yeah, you can't see what they're listening to, so you don't know, like, oh, it's not going to sound good in that position, and you don't know the suggestion that you're saying is actually just irrelevant. I don't know. I think they all should kind of get more respect.
How much of your day-to-day work now is influenced by your sister in your own ear, asking you to, or telling you what the struggles of her career path
are? Right. I mean, I can see it, and I was just on another set without her there, and that's when I see, like, the other sound people that have to go through the same things that I hear complaints about, and a lot of times it will have to do with the camera department, and I just feel bad because that's my department, so anything that I can hopefully do, I want to try to be accommodating.
So you said you were on the set without her there, so do you guys do a lot of work together?
We probably do more work not together, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Not by choice, obviously. I mean, it does sound so, like, when's, hey, are you available? By the way, we need a DP, go figure, sound person. Do you know someone? Like, that normally doesn't happen. Yeah. So, yeah, we can't always get to work together, but it is nice when we do.
So how much of, or I guess, moving from South Carolina to Los Angeles, what was the push that got you to come out here? Was it just the understanding that this is where the hub is, or was it anything else that sort of brought you out?
It was pretty much the understanding that this is where it's at. I feel like it was always the dream, you know, for anyone probably pursuing film. I mean, I guess there's Atlanta now and stuff like that, but it's always like, oh, Los Angeles, if you want to.
Not for long in Atlanta.
Oh, they going away? Or they got all them... Yeah,
they've gotten stuff pulled this week.
Yeah.
They got more pulled coming next week.
Hmm. Is that from, like, the abortion stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, if anything, that should open their eyes to see that people there aren't agreeing, you know?
Well, it's an economic push. That's how it works, right? The money's comes first.
Yeah, well, I like to think that maybe states care about the people working there and work being in them. And hopefully that's more than a fundamental right, you know? Mm-hmm. Hopefully they care more about what the people care about, because that's what this country's supposed to be about. But lately it doesn't seem to be that way.
It's very true.
Where do you do most of your work?
I do most of my work in Los Angeles. This month I do get to travel to New York.
What are you working on out there? Can you tell us?
Yeah, well, I'm working on the documentary currently.
Really?
So that'll also, some interviews will take place there.
All right, documentary about what?
Yeah, well, I did sign one of them NDA things, so I should, right. Like, I don't know what I can and what I can't say and who's going to come after me and all that. So.
All right, well, let's take a step back. I think we were, you know, talking about Avery working on social and stuff. How do you see social for what you do as work? Do you see that as a tool that you're leveraging to, you know, get your brand out there? Or are you actively trying to do that? Or is that just, you know, one comes after the other?
I mean, I guess in these days it's kind of unfortunate that it's a necessary thing to have a social presence. It's just 2019 and that's how it seems to be going. I don't know. I like to kind of get my name out there using social media. And I think people have discovered me from social media. But I'm trying to really pinpoint if, like, jobs actually come from social media. I don't think so. But, you know, when people check you out, see if you're legit, it helps to have that profile and it helps to have your work. It helps to have behind the scenes pictures. People just want to see, kind of, is this person legit? Should we hire them? Yeah.
Well, I've seen your brand on social media. I think I figured you were actively using that medium to go after jobs. only because I see you branding yourself. You know, you have your caricature on your Instagram.
Oh.
I see you with the, you know, pink duty dolly, the pink sands, and all that kind of stuff.
So well, yeah, that's just for me. That I didn't buy it for social media. I was like, you know, if I'm going to have to buy two stands, I'd rather them be really exciting. I mean, not that combo stands aren't exciting, but to really make it worth it, it was like, and to not get them confused with maybe other stands that will be on the set.
I have a question about buying things. How much did your life change when you bought your Arri?
Life, you know, is great with Arri, of course, but the career mainly changed after that. I was not a good AC, go figure. So, and then I just wasn't passionate about it. It's two different jobs.
Being the camera op versus
being a cameraman and being an AC. Too many people do both, and it's like when you like even promote yourself as a camera operator, you'll still get requests for AC. It's like, why? They're two different jobs. If you want everything out of focus, please hire me. But yeah, so I wasn't probably gonna make it going up the route, and then I also didn't want to get stuck in an AC category, because like once you're a little established as an AC, it's your ladder up is moving up with better AC jobs. So I knew I wanted to DP in the long run, so why not start? And the way to do that at such a young age is hard. For me, I just saw it as investing in this piece of equipment with a big brand. And even if I got jobs just by having this camera, you don't get the second job just by having a camera.
No. 'Cause
you either do it right or you do it wrong. So yeah, that was a way to kind of get my name out there. And
quite a leap of faith.
It was, yeah, still paying it off. But, you know, almost there, I see that light.
Nice.
I do. But I've really enjoyed the camera. And I mean, these days it's hard to have an excuse to not shoot, you know. That's how you get better, is just shoot, mm-hmm. no matter what. So I definitely enjoyed experimenting with for fun just by having this camera. And
so what are you working on the most right now? Is it commercial? Is it episodic, narrative?
It just jumps back and forth. Obviously, I like narrative the most. This past weekend, I shot narrative, but then I also shot another day for this documentary. So that's what this weekend consisted of. And I do music videos. And I don't know if it's reality, but like documentary shows is what I've been on this year. What
kind of music videos you've been working on?
My last music video was a, which one was my last music video? I don't know, they vary, and I don't really know, I don't want to categorize the songs wrong.
Okay.
As, like, I say pop, and then, like, the artist's like, oh man, that wasn't pop, I'm like,
So who are the artists?
I've shot for 3T, which is Michael Jackson's nephews. I've shot for Lauren Sanderson, Zach Abel, the rapper Sweetie. I've operated for Trey Songz, T.I., Meek Mill. Nice. Yeah, that was just operating.
I saw an interesting picture that I don't know if you guys are going to know who it is, but how did you get a picture of Bruce Sweden and you?
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was from an event at the school that I went to.
Okay.
And he just came to talk to, like, students. Of course, being a big Michael Jackson fan, I was like,
are you?
Whoa. Yeah.
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 Bruce Sweden is a legend. He made Thriller. He made Off the Wall. Hall of Fame guy.
So how much do you see your own voice leading into these different projects? Do you have, is it your voice that's going into it? Is it the artist that's dictating, or how do you sort of see your
role? I mainly see my voice through the camera and lighting, and that's fun because and the artist doesn't dictate that.
Sure.
So I would get like a lookbook from the director, and I go through that, see what would best tell this vision by using the camera and the lens choice. And that's fun because I do feel like that's where my voice comes in handy.
Sure.
Because when dealing with music videos, I haven't had like a director just saying, this is what we're going to shoot on. You know, they rely on me, but I do know there's directors out there that do have stronger minds about what equipment we're going to use. And that's totally cool too.
So with your camera, your rig that you put together, what was the decision that went into saying, okay, this is going to be what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy into this. It's going to be so for context, we've had a number of people who've been on the show who have said that they would be nervous about buying huge equipment that at some point might, you know, cycle out. So what was the decision to say, this is going to be what I'm going to do? Was it, did someone give you that advice to say that this is a good way to start to get jobs, so people know that you're serious and it's not just, you know, someone else coming into the industry?
No, I don't think anybody's gave me that advice. Sometimes I do, but I think you have to accept the fact that it's going to cycle out.
Mm-hmm.
The camera I bought has not yet, and I bought it 4 years ago, and it was just a year old then. But I did know that Arri has a long lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they ever do cycle out, I don't think it's something that you could ever regret getting.
Yeah.
It's just such a strong industry name,
mm-hmm,
that it seemed pretty safe to go with.
I've heard some stories of people who have bought Reds who all of a sudden invest, you know, whatever, on the low end, $20,000, let's say.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this huge boom of people who've jumped into the Red market, and in like on ShareGrid, it's just absolutely tanking as a rental item.
Hmm.
And so it's interesting, like, you obviously made the smart choice. It was the choice that, you know, it, not necessarily just for renting, but is a camera that has kept its value, not, you know, unlike
right.
a Red or...
Well, yeah, I'm a big Red fan too.
Yeah.
But, and I've met people that's probably, they paid their Red off way quicker than I still haven't paid mine off.
Yeah.
I'm almost there, but yeah, it's all about how you do it. For me, I was not going to devalue my equipment too low. So on ShareGrid, I'll see camera packages that are better, you know, that have more accessories or whatever. They're cheaper than mine. I'm like, okay, no wonder mine doesn't run out. But I don't want to devalue it
sure.
to something I'm not safe.
So do you rent out just the camera on ShareGrid, or are you touting yourself as a camera op with the camera?
Not on ShareGrid. I don't say, hey, hire my camera and guess who comes with it. Definitely not. It's like a child. You got to let them go out, you know, throw them out in the world.
How's that worked out for you?
Pretty good. You know, when they first get a little bruised, it's like
no tears,
the end of the world. But we're 4 years in. The documentary I'm on just bought another mirror. It looks so nice, but I love mine. It looks like a true war
four
camera.
Years worth of
yeah it's also very pink, just so you know. Yeah,
pink eyepiece.
Yes, a pink XLR that my sister made.
Nice.
Every like little accessory is marked pink because you never know who else is going to have something similar. And then how do you know which one's yours? Something gets misplaced. Yeah, I haven't really ran into anyone else with pink marked equipment.
That's
so
great.
What are
great
you doing
then?
Yeah.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Any big influencers in your career?
For sure. I do have a best friend who's also a mentor. His name is Jay Hoban. It's taught me a lot, especially about lighting.
Okay.
Yeah, because I came from the camera world, and I was pretty good at finding natural light. But when it came to making artificial light, I guess, look natural and stuff, it was a little more tough. But really learning how to shape and all of that was really nice. Something that I definitely needed.
What were some of those? Sorry.
Yeah, I think lighting is the number one most important part of cinematography. Then it's lenses, and then it's camera.
So coming from South Carolina, not necessarily having a base, I don't think you had a base here of
no.
people.
No, I mean, I did have family in Orange County that we were able to stay with, like, the first year yeah. to make sure we didn't move into, like, wanted to check out this whole area before, like, really committing to it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's no one else in the industry that I knew.
So who were those people? Like, how did you start to find those people? Was it just putting your name out there, starting to work and figure out, you know, like this person, don't like that person? Was it sort of that, or?
It was like taking low paid or no paid jobs. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you have to find the right person. Keep in contact with them. It'll lead to maybe something a little bigger, something paid. And having a little bit of social media presence helped.
Yeah.
But when we got here, we mainly took those low to no paid jobs, which was great because when you are on those jobs and you are getting a start out, like, you're not, I guess, I don't know. It just somehow worked out.
Yeah.
So.
We've heard some people say that it's that fine line of deciding how do you go from saying, you know, I'm not experienced enough to deserve money to I am experienced. Like, I'm not just going to do something for nothing.
For sure. I mean, I think at some point you got to realize it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
Whether that's to a friend or a project you've been attached to. It's, if something's not worth, then you're going to know. And it might even show up for the project. Mm-hmm. So it's nice for yourself and nice for the other people to not attach yourself to something you don't feel comfortable doing.
Sure. And so you have your camera now. You've had it for a while.
Yeah.
And I think that you had said at the top of the show that you consistently use it when maybe not just for shoots that you're being paid for. Are you making your own sort of narrative projects and diving into your own creative vision with it? Or are you not doing that as much?
Yeah, I try to just for fun and to continue to learn, because you're never going to be done learning. If I'm not doing anything, I would rather just take the camera out and shoot.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, you do have to give yourself a break.
How much do you actually create your own stuff? Are you writing at all? Do you have?
I don't write. No. But I do like to create just fun projects. Try to do like two every month. Just, you know, not everything you do has to be led to something amazing.
Yeah.
So
what kind of projects do you like to do for yourself, like on your own time?
I've seen some of that.
Yeah.
Your cosplay.
Oh, I mean, that's more Halloween for fun. I'm a big Halloween fan. Yeah.
So what kind of lenses do you like? Like, which lenses give you the best look for your style of shooting?
That's a tough question because I think that's why I didn't want to invest in lenses. You'll hear people say, oh, it's a smarter investment. But then the lens is the look. You can get different looks on an Arri. You can get different looks on a Red because of the lenses that you use. But when you do own lenses, you're married to that look.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a favorite. It depends on the project. There are definitely lenses that I like. I like K35s. I like Master Primes. I like anamorphics for sure. I got to use G-Series from Panavision. I'm not sure anything will kind of top that because it was Panavision. But yeah, they're not always the right choice. So can't really say I have a favorite or a go-to, and I hope that I don't have a style that you can just say, oh, that was, you know, that one always shoots on K35s, right? That's all. That's how we recreate it. Yep. Yeah, I don't want to be that person.
Fair enough.
So I think that some of the most recognizable stuff that I've seen you in or know you from is your equipment with Matthews. I'm just curious.
Oh, that's great. Tell Matthews that. Yeah. I bet they would love to know that.
It's interesting. They, I didn't know you until Joe had mentioned you. I'm a little bit newer to this side of the industry.
Oh, yeah.
And when I started to see the pink equipment, I was like, oh, that's Katie, okay.
Yep.
How did that sort of come around? Was it a relationship that you had with them after you had, you know, you were looking for equipment, or is it something that they had reached out to you about?
I've always been a fan of Duty, the inventor of the Duty Dolly. I've always saw him at the trade shows, and always, the Duty Dolly was always my choice of, like, the slider dolly. It's just so much, I think it's well made, and it can literally do anything. But I would see him at the trade shows, and one time Tyler actually had a pink dolly there. I don't know if they just made it for fun or for the shows, but I was actually interested in it. So I always talked about it, and then we used it for a feature that I did. They're like, which one do you want? I was like, the pink one, of course. So then I eventually bought it for myself.
Yeah,
and I had to. I feel like it was, I don't think it was made for me, but I feel like it was.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a super cool little branding piece, and then now the combo stands as well.
Yeah, no, that was my idea. I think they were like, kind of, like, okay, yeah, we'll make fully pink stands, whatever. You're just cool. I was like, great. Wasn't really expecting them to be made so soon, but then I got an email like, hey, they're ready. And like, okay, cool. And when I saw them, it was like, perfect, because the stands, which are called the Low Girl stands,
okay,
are nice. Right? We're being gender friendly now. And they were the perfect shade of pink.
Yeah,
I love them.
No, they're super cool.
Yeah, and they're only strictly used for the dolly, so you know you'll never see a light hanging on them.
Right.
Maybe I don't want to speak too soon, but yeah, that's what I got them for.
So jumping in, just curious, when we had Julia Swain on, we talked a little bit about set politics today, and obviously that's been a conversation that's been around this industry very seriously for the last couple of years. And I'm curious, have you, you know, what's been your experience? Have you had those sort of, those tough conversations with people, you know, to make them aware that, you know, you're a serious person, you're not just on set?
Every situation's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know. I feel like when I'm hired because they think I'm the best for the job. I guess more so recently, and it was this year, which is the sad part. I was on like a Lifetime movie, and I was operating, and the director's like, "Oh, so this next scene, yeah, you're not gonna operate it. You can just AC." I had no decision part of it. I told them, like, okay, I'm not a good AC. And they found that out. But, sometimes I'm like, did I do that right? I kind of wish I would have more so spoke up.
Sure.
Said, hey, this is what I'm here for. This is my job. Just because you don't think I can do a 4-hour handheld scene, you're not the person that makes,
well,
I don't know. Cause then again, that's the director. So I don't know. It was all in all, it was evaluating it. It was like, someone that says that isn't really someone I'm going to work with anymore anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of, it's like, cool. Yeah. All I see.
Yeah.
And then half of the stuff was probably out of focus. Like, yeah. But that was degrading.
Sure.
And maybe it wasn't so much about being a female, but like, I am like a 5-foot little thing. I don't look like a DP, whatever that may be, whatever it is. I don't look like it. And maybe that could change.
With your sister being in the industry, do you ever have, are there those certain shoots, those opportunities that you've had with her that have been like exciting to have your sister, you know, working with you? Because I feel like it's a pretty rare thing to have a sibling or, you know,
right,
family member within your chosen industry that you get to, you know, work with
that's
every day.
True. And that's hard to believe. Not everyone has that.
Yeah.
For me, it's just so normal. I think it's cool because we just have that type of relationship where you can, you can look and know what one's thinking. So either like, sure. Oh, the shot or like a sound or, so the sets are definitely just more fun in general, of course. But what was really the question?
I guess, have you had like a different, or any different sort of opportunities or things that stand out in your mind of like, oh, that was a really fun shoot, or that was, you know, something that was, unique to us that we have this opportunity to work together? Because I mean, even thinking about the industry in general, like you have like the Russo brothers, and like I don't think I could really name another duo that exists within the industry off the top of my head of like people who have, you know, are siblings or
like the Coen brothers.
Yeah, the Coen brothers as well. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like my. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm lame.
So I'm looking at some of your work on your website.
Great, do tell.
Well, I'm looking at the Uber Eats one with the hamster.
Oh, that's cute.
So how challenging is it shooting something small?
Well, that was why I chose a zoom lens and a newer zoom lens, because I wanted it to be sharp and all the little fine details of the little hamster's eyes or the little whiskers, you want them to be sharp. So I had a newer zoom lenses on there, and then that was a double Amira shoot. So, and it was going to be outputted to 1080, so I also utilized the Super 16 mode that they have in there, which gave me double the frame. And really... With, you know, they originally shot a lot of those hamster commercials with wides, and it was so close. They just kind of made the hamsters look monstrous and not as cute. Mm-hmm. So I wanted them to be really, like, telephoto. Still big in the frame, but keeping their small little features small. Yeah. Cute.
So how challenging was it to keep, some depth of field when you're shooting something that small with a zoom lens? You gotta light it properly, right?
You gotta light it properly and just, you know, be on focus. Anticipate little movements. My B cam had a focus AC, but I had to do my own. I think it came out pretty good.
Right on.
What about working with animals in general? I mean, I feel like you can train a dog pretty well, but can you train a hamster?
Well, there was like a hamster trainer there, and I don't know how many they had. They had at least 10. So when one was done acting, they would bring in the stunt double, I guess. And you never know.
So it's a 20 second spot, and there were 10 hamsters on that shoot.
I think there's two. There's a minute one, two.
Okay.
Hamsters have a short attention span.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. But the fact they got to eat really kept.
Oh, I'm sure they were
them motivated. That was like the motivation for those little guys. They were cute.
And then, do you have like a specific as a cinematographer? There are lights that you like. You gravitate towards that you're like, okay, I like these ones for a specific look, and I'm not as excited about these ones, or is that not as much of your
well
focus?
I would never admit to not really being excited about something, because that would just be stupid, but I do have a phase of liking old tungsten lights.
Okay.
They're so classic, so nice. I think the quality's good. I did get to work with sky panels, and the one thing about them is they're so easy. I never worked with them before, but just like 10 seconds in, the menu frame is so user-friendly that you're an expert. So I appreciate that. I like all kinds of lights. I like quasar, aperture, light panel, Digital Sputnik, they're cool. Yeah.
Definitely seems like quasars are gaining popularity.
They're just so easy. They're so easy. Yeah. I have a little 2 foot, and I just find lots of use anywhere.
We've had a lot of conversations with people who have said that's just a great light just to have
with them,
where they can just use it wherever they want. They can just throw it in.
Right. You can backlight, key light, fill light.
Yeah.
You know. name any kind of light. It's just readily available.
Cool.
Yeah. Love it.
Besides the Ari, what are your other favorite things that you have to have on set? What do you bring with you?
Well, I don't want to, like, pinpoint myself to just using Arri also. I mean, I do own the Arri, but I love Red, Panasonic, Panavision. You know, there's... To limit yourself to one tool is hard. But, you know, I also have a light meter contrast viewing glass.
Mm-hmm.
I love my tripod. It's a little strange, but I do. It's the Sockler Setting 7 plus 7. Pretty much use it anywhere. You know, we had a big camera package, and I think it came with a big heavy O'Connor head, and I don't know. I love mine. It's so lightweight and easy. You can pick it up.
It's not pink yet, though.
It's not. I don't want to go overboard with pink. I already got those people coming after me, like, what about the reflections? Like, man, those lights are going to cast a pink whatever. I'm like, yeah, don't worry about your own equipment. Yeah.
Yeah.
If that happens, you just cover it up in black and you move on.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste your time worrying about stuff like that.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's a cool statement piece. I really appreciate the fact that you've done that, because I feel like... There are probably two colors that exist within this industry. It's like silver or black, and it's
kind of
nice to have something.
And there are like protocol for that. Yeah. You know, like black, yeah, it doesn't reflect. It's nice. For sure, but
yeah.
And then chrome's more visible on the dark set, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I love the pink. I know it's mine.
Yeah, well, it sets you aside, and it's just a different look than, you know, what's traditional, and that's kind of nice to
for sure, see. For sure.
So are there other things that, you know, you always have? So you have your meter, you have your camera, usually.
Mm-hmm.
You have your, you know, viewing glass. Are there other things that you always make sure that you have on set with you? That you, you know, if you aren't on set with them, or you're on set and they're not there, that you're sort of, you know, you feel naked, or that it's just unprepared.
Well, like, you know, typical stuff like the crescent wrench and flatheads and all of that, the Allen wrench, the electrical stuff, like the one that tells you who's getting power and why, and the circuit tester, things like that. Other than that, you know, you just need lenses. Not every shot, unfortunately, I can use my dolly for. Yeah, I mean, obviously, camera, lenses, lighting.
Yeah.
It varies, really.
So looking to the future, you have your documentary that you're working on a documentary right now.
Yeah.
What are some other things that, you know, are in the future, if you can talk about it, but mm-hmm. also what are some of your goals for, you know, the next couple of years?
Right. I mean, I think one thing to definitely go to the next step is probably representation. Get an agent. Looking into that. The union's a little out of years, I feel, for now. For now, it's just like doing more non-union. I don't know if it's the right time to join the union. I don't think so. So kind of holding off on that. But that's definitely within the next 2 years or so a goal for sure. But representation is, I feel like, my next step besides just bigger and better projects. Every year I want to be better. And maybe not necessarily the projects, because you can't control what comes your way. But you can control the outcome and the photography. So each year I seem to like how the images are turning out, how they're looking. I can totally see the improvement, and that's pretty cool.
Mm. Love that.
Yeah, for sure.
Good goals. Always good goals.
I hope so. It's literally just better projects and representation, and I feel like that's pretty typical for anyone. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, any cool projects you want to tell us about that you're really happy with the turnout? Like, you know, the end result?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because it's funny, because my favorite project probably won't necessarily be my favorite photography. It's strange, but also makes sense that it all relies on the rest of the departments. It relies on art department and the director for sure, like how the acting comes out. And sometimes you're just disappointed. I mean, whether you like your photography or not, which is the other outcome, like maybe it's not the edit that you like or, yeah, but the a project that I really liked that I think had just about everything was the Lauren Sanderson music video.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I shot that on Master Primes in a Helium.
Nice.
The art department was like there. They're good. All the images were filled with stuff, you know, helping me. A lot of what you do is just having a good production designer. They can really help.
But it gets hard because once you feel that and you feel like everybody's going in the same direction, if you go to the next one, it's not there.
It's hard. Once you love the photography, it's next. You got to love the edit.
Mm-hmm. What about photography?
It's not always there.
Which photography are you most happy with?
I did second unit on a Christian film. It's called The Penitent Thief. And the trailer's out, so I'm sure I can talk about this. Okay. But, it was with Kevin Sorbo and James Russo. And the one scene was with tungsten lights, and the other was at night, so it was motivated by fire, and that's when I used the sky panels. And I love the way it looked. It was very period. Production design was there. I think it's supposed to be released this year, so I haven't seen the edit to fully judge, like, oh, I love how it came out. But high hopes, of course.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. But I do love the way that it turned out. Of course, surrounded myself with a great team, great gaffer, key grip, AC. And my sister did sound, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's a perfect team, really.
Cool. So that's The Penitent Thief.
Yeah. It is.
So when you decided to make your investment into your camera.
Yes.
Is that when she made her investment into the sound devices?
It is. It sure is. Right.
You both leapt together.
Yeah, that one was significantly more affordable. But
the sound stuff?
Yeah, and her sound kit has definitely expanded a lot more since then.
But still, that first purchase, you don't forget those.
Oh, no, we did that together, I don't think.
They leave marks.
Anything will be as exciting as that, or as, I don't know.
It's like a symbol of committing. It's like, this is it.
Right.
I'm not doing anything else. This is what I'm doing.
This is the job. It has to be.
No regrets. You're good.
No, I think it was the right decision. I can honestly say I wouldn't be wherever I am without that camera, which is like kind of cool just to pinpoint something to a physical object. But
so tell me a little bit about that. So what have you done to make that yours? Like any customizations?
Right. Well, we did talk about the pink. Yeah, it does have the pink Blue Star eye cushion and the pink XLR. Every little cable is kind of wrapped pink, and I didn't want it to be too overly over the top. So it's all small little details, because that is the thing that the actor is in their view. So you don't want to have this bright pink thing right in their face. So it's a little subtle, but
it's a good conversation starter, though.
It is, yeah.
Come up, and I've never seen that before.
Right. I mean, you can just tell that it's mine.
But it also shows your attention to detail, so they know you're not messing around.
Right. I mean, just the Aerie label on there kind of shows that. At least I like to think.
Cool. Well, so for this week's podcast, I wanted to thank G-Tech again for the for the G-Raid.
It's working great.
And
They have rose gold drives, just in case y'all don't know.
Okay.
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
They do, yeah.
They're super cool. Also, thank you to Light Panels for this new 1x1.
Thanks, Vitech.
Yeah, exactly. they consistently kill it. It's funny, we had a conversation last week with he's a cinematographer as well. Yes. VFX guy,
yep.
Mauricio, and he was saying that he loves the new light panels. They actually are really cool.
That thing's cool light. Bright, man.
It's so bright. It's insanely bright.
So easy to use, too.
Yeah.
Even I could set it up.
That's how I feel about some things, that's for sure.
So, for Avery Pascal, Katie Williams, and Paul McKenna. This is Joe Nunez with the Film Tools Podcast. Thanks for listening.